Today I will introduce some basic concepts and general theories in tumor microenvironment with an emphasis on the tumor stroma, which is complementary to the other two speakers in this session. Connection's not very good. All right. So the title of my talk is Tumor Microenvironment and Two-Sided Story. And why is two-sided story? I hope you will find out at the end of the talk. One of the first people who thought about the contribution of tumor microenvironment to tumor progression is a pathologist called Stephen Paget. He looked through many tumor samples, and he noticed there's a correlation between the tissue surrounding the tumor cells and the kind of malignancy that he saw. Then he proposed the seed and sow hypothesis, suggesting that tumor cells are like seeds. They need a proper soil to grow, and there has to be a compatibility between the type of seeds and the type of soil. The seed and sow hypothesis has really important implications, which means the microenvironment plays dual roles. There's a good environment, and there's a bad environment. And the good environment, well, it's good for us, bad for the tumors, and will suppress the tumor growth in this kind of environment. And the bad environment is the tumor cells like to cultivate, and it will promote the tumor progression. And that's the important concept during tumor microenvironment, because that builds the foundation for the therapeutic intervention of the tumor microenvironment for cancer treatment. One of the pioneer who actually directly tested the contribution of tumor microenvironment on tumor progression was Mina Bassell at Berkeley. At the time, the 1980s, everybody was trying to adjust what oncogene does to tumor. She started wondering what the tumor context does to tumor progression. And it was very well known at the time, the oncogene expressed on virus such as Ralph's sarcoma virus. If you inject that virus into chicken, you get tumor. But you don't get tumor everywhere. You get a tumor on the injected site. Even though the virus circulating throughout the whole chicken, the tumor only occurs at the injection site. So she started wondering whether it has something to do with the injury that was introduced by this injection. So she introduced a wound by the mesopine on the left wing of the chicken and injected the virus on the right wing of the chicken. Now she gets tumors on both sides. Here's the tumor produced from the wound. So this suggests strongly that the wound introduced an environment that cooperates with the oncogene from the virus that generates a tumor. This also indicates that in a normal situation, when you don't have the wound, it must be able to suppress the tumor progression even though there's oncogene expressed there. So then that means that if we normalize this microenvironment of the tumor, we might be able to actually suppress the tumor progression. That was recently tested by Mary Hendricks using melanoma cells. Melanoma cells are coming from melanocytes, which originally came from neuroplastic cells during development. So she thought if she injects those melanoma cells into the original neuroplastic cells in the embryo, and then looked at during embryogenesis what happened to the cells. Well, turns out those melanoma cells don't form tumor anymore. During embryogenesis, they look like neuroplastic cells, migrate through different parts of the embryo, and just behave just like neuroplastic cells. So that suggests that these melanoma cells, they remember where they came from. If you put them in the right environment, they will behave like their precursors. So this suggests that we can change the environment and then really suppress the tumor growth. But this kind of conversion is quite dramatic. If we want to really do clinical intervention, we need to tease apart the tumor microenvironment so we can target the components individually. So then we should know what's in the tumor microenvironment. So the other two speakers will address hypoxia and pH and ISH. And I mostly will talk about stroma in the tumor microenvironment, which are the cells that constantly talk with the tumor cells, the endothelial cells during angiogenesis, inflammatory cells in the inflammatory response, fibroblast cells that also contribute. All these cells, there were secrete cytokines or extracellular matrix proteins that mediated crosstalk between tumor cells and these stromal cells. And since the next session, next few sessions will address angiogenesis, so I won't talk about endothelial cells. I will most focus on the inflammatory cells, fibroblast cells, and the extracellular matrix protein that's secreted by these cells. As a matter of fact, these stromal components have been potential therapeutic targets to normalize tumor stroma in order to inhibit tumor progression. And here's the list that's shown here. Tumor-associated fibroblasts, macrophage, mast cell, which are immune cells, and their extracellular matrix molecules. Some of the interventions have not been shown to be very successful. For example, the inhibition of tumor-associated fibroblast cells by blocking TGF-beta has been shown the opposite effect on tumor progression, which means it will promote the tumor progression instead of inhibiting tumor progression. That shows that our lack of knowledge on how these cells work and how to inhibit their function during tumor promotion. So the first, I will talk about the fibroblast cells in a tumor, which are cancer-associated fibroblast cells, abbreviated sometimes as CAFs. Fibroblast cells are very loosely defined. They are pretty much just cells that elongate and then form extensive cell processes. They are present in the mesenchyme and play multiple roles during pathological progression. Fibroblasts in the normal tissue are quiescent. They are called the resident fibroblast cells. And they can be activated during wound healing or during tumor progression to become active fibroblast cells. The transition between the normal fibroblast cells to active fibroblast cells is not entirely clear, although we know that they secrete different growth factors, they secrete different extracellular matrix proteins, they can be activated to play different roles. In terms of tumor progression, was a classic experiment has shown that the cancer-associated fibroblast cells can promote a tumor progression but not normal fibroblast cells. So this was done by Kuhner's lab at UCSF in 1999, which they isolated the cancer-associated fibroblast cells from tumor and then mixed with tumor cells and injected into mice, they see this huge tumor growing up. But if they isolated just normal resident fibroblast cells from the tissue and then mixed with the tumor cells, injected into mice, they don't see tumor. So that suggests that the cancer-associated fibroblast cells can promote the tumor progression, but the normal fibroblast cells cannot. We know, right, there has been quite a bit of investigation on how this works, and we know quite a bit how the cancer-associated fibroblast cells can promote the tumor progression. The fibroblast cells can secrete cytokines, such as TGF-beta or matrix proteins, such as tenascin C, to promote the invasiveness of the carcinoma. It can secrete different molecules to recruit the immune cells. It can stimulate angiogenesis, and can introduce epithelial mesenchymal transition through the three cytokines. But we still don't quite understand how the switch from a resident fibroblast cells to the cancer-associated fibroblast cells works. And that leads to the difficulty of trying to normalize the cancer-associated fibroblast cells. There's some attempt of doing that. So there, for example, there's FAP, which is a fibroblast activating protein that's only expressed in the active fibroblast cells, and the inhibitor has some promising inhibition results. It can inhibit the tumor progression in the mouse model. But other inhibitors that's been tried, for example, the HGF inhibitor has shown the opposite effect on the tumor progression. It can actually increase the invasiveness of breast cancer. So the success of trying to normalize cancer-associated fibroblast cells is very limited, and there's more study is needed to push this forward. Now the second type of cells are the cancer-associated immune cells. Well, our immune system is supposed to protect us, and the cancer cells are different from normal cells. They express different cell surface molecules, so they should be attacked by the immune system. And in fact, through decades of debates and experimental testings and conflicting data, has been now established that our immune system is indeed able to do that, at least at early stage of tumorigenesis. So this is a picture of the dendritic cells, which are the antigen-presenting cells, one of the immune cells, can kill and take in the tumor cells, which is labeled as green here, by phagocytosis. and eventually the debris of the tumor cells will be presented on cell surface as antigens and stimulate the inflammatory response to completely eliminate the tumor cells. There's also mouse data now. There are lots of immunodeficient mice, and here's just an incomplete list of those immunodeficient mice. Almost all of them show increased tumorigenesis in these mice, suggesting strongly that our immune system are able to attack the tumor cells. They do have the tumor suppressive functions. However, there's equally abundant evidence showing that the inflammation can promote tumor progression. There are quite a few cancer types that are associated with inflammation, suggesting that immune cells can also promote tumor progression. This also has been shown experimentally by many groups. I'm just going to show you one example here. This is the macrophage that can secrete cytokines to attract tumor cells during metastasis. And you can see in the movie that the green cells, which are the tumor cells, will migrate toward the red macrophage. You see here, green cells migrate toward the macrophage during the metastasis. And if you deplete the macrophage, the metastasis will be impaired. So suggesting immune cells have an active role during the tumor progression, in this case, metastasis. So now there's a apparent balance between the tumor promotion and immunosurveillance of the immune cells. And tumor cells know how to tilt the balance to their favor. And then if we know how they do that, maybe we can tilt the balance to our favor. And how tumor cells do it? So immune system usually, depending on the cytokine being secreted, depending on the context they are, they can play dual roles. And one example I'm giving here is a macrophage. There are two types of macrophages, called M1 and M2. So M1 macrophages are the typical classical macrophages. They will be activated by, for example, here LPS is a polysaccharide on bacteria, on the pathogen, or interferon gamma. And they will secrete cytokines, and they will take in the pathogens and present antigens on themselves, and they can kill tumors. So they have a tumor-resistant function. And there's the M2 macrophage. They can be activated by different types of cytokines. They have opposite function. They actually can promote tumor progression. Tumor cells are able to secrete those cytokines to push the macrophage toward the M2 polarization. So that these macrophages, they are tumor-associated macrophages, and they are M2 macrophages. They are able to inhibit the inflammatory response and suppress the killing mode of the immune system and promote the immune response that can promote the tumor progression. It will also stimulate angiogenesis and activate proliferation, invasion, metastasis of tumor cells, can also stimulate matrix deposition and remodeling, which I will talk a little bit later. So then we know the immune system has two functions, and there's a macrophage of M1 and M2. So directly, we can try to push this toward this direction. So M1 can kill the tumor cells. If we can turn off the M2 and activate M1, then there's a tumor killing effect. It turns out to be not that simple, because this has to be specific to macrophages. And as far as I know, it has been hard to do. We know that M1 macrophages has NF-kappa B turned on, and in M2 macrophages is turned off. And in theory, we could activate NF-kappa B and push the polarization to the M1. But in the tumor cells, if you activate NF-kappa B, it will activate proliferation tumor cells. So it becomes complicated, and that needs to be sorted out both experimentally and pharmacologically. So I'm going to move on to the third part of the matrix tumor microenvironment component, which is extracellular matrix. I know quite a few experts in the audience on this topic, so I'll just give you a very brief introduction on the extracellular matrix. Extracellular matrix are secreted by pretty much all the cells, and they are polypeptides. They are assembled into highly ordered structure on the cell surface. There are mainly two types of extracellular matrix. One is called the basal lamina, sometimes called the basement membrane. They form this membrane structure that separates epithelial cells from the mesenchyme. They can also wrap around tissues, organs, such as blood vessels or internal organs. And there's a second type of matrix called interstitial matrix. that they are in the space between cells in the mesenchyme, they are important for the growth and differentiation of the cells. Turns out tumor cells respond differently to the matrix. So this is from Valerie Rivas' group work from Mina Basile's lab. She used two different types of breast cancer cells. One is S1 cells, they are not very malignant, and T4-2 cells, they are malignant. If they put them in the matrix, which is the matrix on tumor, these cells look differently. So these non-malignant cells look very organized, polarized structure, organized structure. In breast cancer, it's called a CNI structure. In T4-2, the malignant cells just form random aggregates. They are not polarized, not organized. Well, that's interesting. But then whatever, in addition, she also found something that's also very striking, is she can actually reverse this phenotype to this by blocking the crosstalk between the tumor cells and the matrix. So she used the anti-integrin beta-1 antibody and then mixed it with those tumor cells. Now the tumor cells look just like non-malignant tumor cells in the matrix. Integrins are receptors for the extracellular matrix. So in this particular case, when she blocked the integrin receptor on the tumor cells, she could revert the phenotype of the tumors. And there's another way to do it. So from the same author, Zella Rivers' group, found that if you change the density of the extracellular matrix, you can also change the phenotype of the tumor cells. So if you increase the pressure in the matrix, by increase the density of matrix, the tumor cells become more invasive than in the matrix that's less dense. So in theory, we could somehow relax the matrix or make it less dense, we can revert the tumor phenotype to a more organized non-malignant state. So how does this work? This is a simpler view of how this might work. So the matrix will interact with the integrins and then stimulate downstream effectors such as the phosphatidylation kinase and the cell kinase and stimulate cell migration invasion and then promote the tumor progression phenotype. And then we can intervene some of the downstream effectors, we might be able to revert the tumor phenotype to a less malignant state. Another way to modulate ECM extracellular matrix is by its degradation, and there are many proteases that are involved in it. And one class of a protease called the matrix metalloproteinases have been actively investigated and have been playing important roles during tumor progression. Matrix metalloproteases can degrade ECMs, and this is just a simplified diagram showing the function of MMPs in terms of ECM degradation. You can degrade all types, different types of matrix depending on which MMP you're talking about, and especially the collagen, the laminin, and then proteins. The degradation products of the ECM have been shown to play roles during tumor progression. And here's the list of the fragments from the different types of collagens, and the more recent the prolecan fragments show has been shown to anti-angiogenic effect, and there's one other fragment that show promotion of an angiogenic effect. So this effect I have covered that you can target the ECM to revert the tumor phenotype to a non-malignant state. And some of that I already mentioned, the ECM cleaved product and the integrin inhibition can revert the malignant phenotype. The inhibition MMPs have been attempted quite extensively, but the inhibition has different effects depending on the trial, and that largely is because the inhibition has not been very specific to a specific type of MMP, and also because the context of MMP function is specific to different contexts. So that becomes complicated in terms of inhibition of MMP. And also in addition, MMP does not only work on ECM, it has other functions as well that makes the story even more complex. So to summarize my talk, the tumor microenvironment is essential for cancer progression. And the stroma cells that I mentioned in this talk is the cancer-associated fibroblasts and the immune cells. And I believe the next few talks will talk about endothelial cells. And the secreted cytokines, the ECMs, are important components of tumor microenvironment. And this tumor malignancy can be reverted by normalizing its microenvironment. And the key is to understand the switch from a normal state to a malignant state in the tumor microenvironment, and that's important for the future clinical intervention for cancer treatment. And a big thank you at the end for all of you. Thank you.